Hello and welcome to Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 10th of September 2007, brought to you by azonano.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of Azo Nano News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll be talking with three extraordinary nanotechnologists: Regan Stinnett from Sandia National Laboratories, Robert Giasoli, the Secretary of MANSEF, and David Tolfrey, MANSEF's Vice President, about a range of subjects, including the commercialization and exploitation of nanotechnology to produce extraordinary products. We'll also hear how the ultimate spin doctors are measuring atomic spin, how Russian military researchers are making their bombs bigger with nanotechnology, and how NASA are making hot chips much, much hotter. These stories and more in this edition of Azo Nano News. Scientists at the US Department of Energy's Brookhaven National Laboratory have developed a new method for controlling the self-assembly of nanometer and micrometer-sized particles. The method, based on designed DNA shells that coat a particle's surface, can be used to manipulate the structure and therefore the properties and potential uses of numerous materials that may be of interest to the industry. For example, such fine-tuning of materials at the molecular level promises applications in efficient energy conversion, cell-targeted systems for drug delivery, and biomolecular sensing for environmental monitoring and medical applications. The researchers performed the experiments on gold nanoparticles, measuring billionths of a metre, and polystyrene microparticles, measuring millionths of a metre. These particles served as models for the possibility of using the technique with other small particles. The scientists synthesized DNA to chemically react with the particles. They controlled the assembly process by keeping the total amount of DNA constant while varying the relative fraction of complementary and non-complementary DNA. This technique allowed for regular assembly over a very broad range, from forming clusters consisting of millions of particles to almost keeping individual particles separate in non-aggregating form. Scientists who dream of shrinking computers to the nanoscale look to atomic spin as one possible building block for both processor and memory. Yet setting the spin of an atom, let alone measuring it, has been a challenge. Now, University of California, Berkeley physicists have succeeded in measuring the spin of a single atom, moving one step closer to quantum computers and spintronic devices built from nanoscale transistors based on atomic spin. While researchers previously have been able to deduce the spin polarization of an atom in a surface or thin film where the atoms are packed together and the spins are in an orderly arrangement, no one has been able to directly measure the polarization of an individual adatom spin until now. Adatoms are atoms that sit on top of a surface and are not incorporated into it. Employing a relatively new technique called low-temperature spin-polarized scanning tunneling spectroscopy, essentially a scanning tunneling microscope that can probe the spin and energy-dependent electron density of a surface, they were able to determine the spin of isolated adatoms atop these cobalt nano islands. Brad Jones, a professor of chemistry at Wake Forest University, is leading a team of researchers at four institutions to develop the first handheld field instrument capable of detecting and identifying radioactive particles at the site of potential contamination. The device will enable authorities to quickly test dust, soil, water, and crops in the event of a terrorist attack such as a dirty bomb. The three-year project is funded by the National Science Foundation in conjunction with the Department of Homeland Security, which asked scientists to submit proposals for radioactivity detection devices. Jones, who specializes in creating spectroscopic instruments, saw the potential to adapt a design he originally conceived years ago to permit rapid field testing for lead in blood samples. Jones's tungsten coil atomic emission spectrometer is constructed using the metal coil filament from a standard slide projector bulb powered by a 12-volt battery, such as the type used to start boats or automobiles. NASA researchers have designed and built a new circuit chip that can take the heat like never before. In the past, integrated circuit chips could not withstand more than a few hours of high temperatures before degrading or failing completely. This chip exceeded 1,700 hours of continuous operation at 500 degrees Celsius, a breakthrough that represents a 100-fold increase in what had previously been achieved. The new silicon carbide differential amplifier integrated circuit chip may provide benefits to anything requiring long-lasting electronic circuits in very hot environments. Such highly durable integrated circuitry and packaging are being developed to enable extremely functional but physically small circuitry for hot sections of jet engines. In the future, such electronics will enhance sensing and control of the combustion process that could lead to improved safety and fuel efficiency, as well as reduced emissions from jet engines. Similar benefits are also possible for automotive engines. Additional potential benefits of long-lasting high-temperature integrated circuitry extends to oil and natural gas well drilling and anything requiring long-lasting electronic circuits in very hot environments, including robotic exploration of the hostile surface environment of Venus. The Russian military have used nanotechnology in the development of a new successfully tested weapon. The weapon, a bomb containing 7 tons of explosives, has been called the father of all bombs and is reportedly around 4 times more powerful than its US equivalent. The basic technology behind the bomb is not new and has been used for at least 40 years. It's technically known as a thermobaric device. Such a bomb is filled with flammable liquid and uses a two-charged system. When dropped, the initial charge releases and disperses the liquid. The second charge ignites this fuel-air cloud, resulting in a massive shockwave and very high temperatures. The new aspect of this bomb is shrouded in secrecy, but it's believed the Russians have used nanotechnology to increase the power of the device. It stands to reason that they've developed a method for ensuring the flammable cloud is composed of extremely small droplets, thereby increasing the speed and intensity of the explosion reaction. University at Buffalo chemists have developed a novel way to grow chemically pure zinc oxide thin films characterized by dense bristle-like nanostructures and a new method for depositing them on temperature-sensitive substrates, including polymers, plastics, and tapes. The research may make possible the deposition of versatile zinc oxide films onto flexible surfaces, enabling the development of more efficient solar cells, liquid crystal displays, chemical sensors, and optoelectronic devices. High-quality zinc oxide thin films are versatile and can be fabricated into many shapes, including films, nanorods, and nanoparticles. However, there's a drawback. They're usually deposited at high temperatures, which can damage or even melt the substrate they're coating. That makes it impossible to coat plastic, a hard drive, an electronic device, or even contact lenses, since the deposition process damages the underlying surface. The University of Oregon has received a $1.6 million grant from the W.M. Keck Foundation to explore the biological effects of exposure to precisely engineered nanoparticles that are being designed for diagnostic and therapeutic uses. The 3-year grant from the Keck Foundation's medical research program will involve 6 researchers. All are members of the Safer Nanomaterials and Nanomanufacturing Initiative, which is directed by the Oregon Nanoscience and Microtechnologies Institute. The interdisciplinary project is designed to help researchers understand potential biological interactions of engineered nanomaterials and develop design rules for the development of nanoparticles with enhanced biological properties. The researchers will produce specific structures of nanomaterials, investigate their interactions with biological systems, and then design new materials and nanoparticle libraries that have specific biological responses. IBM researchers, in collaboration with scientists from the ETH Zurich, have demonstrated a new efficient and precise technique to print at the nanoscale. The method, which allows the scientists to place individual particles precisely where they want them, could advance the development of nanoscale biosensors, ultra-tiny lenses that can bend light inside future optical chips, and the fabrication of nanowires that might be the basis of tomorrow's computer chips. Though still a few years from being used widely, the new technique shows promise for real-world applications outside the lab, without major profound new inventions, and could lead to high-volume manufacturing techniques for nanostructures inside chips and other devices that are more efficient and cost less than today's methods. The achievement offers a promising and powerful new tool for use in a wide range of fields and industries such as biomedicine, electronics and IT that seek ways to exploit the often unique properties of so-called nanoparticles, which are defined as particles smaller than 100 nanometers. It's full of holes and yet it holds together. Whether as a place to store gas molecules, for the separation of substances, as sensors, catalysts and nanoreactors, or materials for optoelectronics, porous crystalline solids with a regular array of defined pores have become indispensable in science and technology. Organometallic compounds can also form porous structures and have greatly broadened the palette of porous materials, though until now these have been limited to species with very small pores. Korean researchers now report the synthesis and characterization of a mesoporous organometallic lattice with cage-like pores that are 3.9 to 4.7 nanometers in diameter. Previously, only a few stable structures made of metal atoms or ions and organic ligands have been made that have larger pores, called mesopores, which are greater than 3 nanometers in diameter. Among the reasons for this is the special type of bonding that takes place between a metal and a ligand, known as a complex coordination. Large cavities can easily destabilize this type of lattice. Just as difficult as the synthesis of such structures is their characterization at the atomic level. The Korean researchers have overcome both challenges. Their lattice structures are made of ions of the rare earth metal terbium and an organic ligand. By using X-ray crystallographic methods, the scientists were also able to precisely determine the structure of both the crystals and the pores. A partnership between Kent State University, Summer Health System and IC MedTech Incorporated has yielded an innovative liquid crystal technology that offers the promise of new drugs which may more effectively manage cancer and other diseases. These companies have taken steps towards that goal. Their collaborative efforts have yielded an innovative liquid crystal technology that offers the promise of new drugs which may more effectively manage cancer and other diseases, called liquid crystal pharmaceuticals or LCPs. Recently, the team gathered at Kent State University's Office of Technology Transfer to file applications for two new patents, one for a new LCP-based anti-tumor drug called Tolosine and another for a formulation that combines Tolosine and another LCP, Apatone. In this week's Azo Nano News interview, we talk with three extraordinary nanotechnologists. Regan Stinnett from the Sandia National Laboratory, Robert Giasoli, the Secretary of MANSEF, and David Tolfrey, MANSEF's Vice President. In this interview, they look at a range of subjects, including the commercialization and exploitation of nanotechnology to produce extraordinary products. The focus of this interview is the transfer of knowledge to provide solutions, as well as educating and inspiring young scientists to become the nanotechnologists of the future.
My name is David Tolfrey. I'm the Vice President of MANSEF, which is the Micro and Nanotechnology Commercialization Education Foundation. I'm one of the founding members of that organization. I also have a consultancy company in that subject as well, and I'm based in the UK. My main interest always has been, and still is the exploitation of these technologies, because there's a huge knowledge base that's been developed over many years in around the world, basically, and only a small fraction of that knowledge has really ever been exploited to produce real products and systems for the market, and there's a huge potential growing marketplace for such products. So the challenge for us has been to how we actually create a mechanism which moves that knowledge into companies and other organizations which have the experience and indeed the ability to produce the products that the world needs. Mm-hmm. And I think we're in a very interesting period at the moment, because the world has a lot of problems coming towards it, not to mention issues like climate change, health issues, issues of security, etc. And the nanotechnology or micro-nanotechnology has, without a doubt in my mind, the ability to address those problems, not necessarily solve them, but to address those problems and make a significant contribution to their solutions. So I think for all of us, we've got to seek the ways of doing that. And it's very urgent. And so instead of waiting 15 to 20 years for a new product to go into the marketplace, which has traditionally been the case, now we have to actually find a way of getting that time to market significantly reduced, so that instead of trying to solve a problem because it's already been caused, we've actually got to move in front of it, so we can then say, well, when it happens, we can actually solve. We've got a solution ready made.
And Regan, I believe you're heavily involved in the educational aspect of nanotechnology.
Well, actually, Sandia, because of its history really as a weapons research area, has amassed really a tremendous, probably unequaled capability in terms of facilities and expertise in the areas of both micro and nanotechnologies. What we're trying to do is bring those to bear on problems even beyond that. That is, problems that are global problems, from energy to what comes after silicon to just all the opportunities that are abound in nanotechnology. And we're trying to use those. Yes, we do want to solve the problems, but we're also trying to get involved, basically our best and brightest students nationwide and even beyond that, so that we can really re-energize these kids who really want to be inspired. And want to be inspired by having a chance to make a difference on a global level. And it's something like what I remember when I grew up. It was the space program. And I thought, wow, how can I be part of this? Well, nanotechnology is sort of like that. And what we can do is provide an opportunity for these folks in universities to have a chance. Let's say they're undergrads and they've gotten to the point of saying, man, this is hard and all my friends are having more fun than I am and I'm sitting here studying. Why am I doing this? Well, the idea is we're going to give them a view of, here's what you're going to do. You pay your dues and you get to work on these cool problems that we love, but they haven't seen before. And now when they get beyond the BS degree, so they can get into grad school and actually become the kind of leaders that we'd like to see them be, what we'll do is give them the chance to be involved in projects that are larger than you can usually be involved in at the university level. Projects that are important, projects that can make a difference. And then be able to work from there to become the leaders that we'd like to see them be, the innovators. So we're going to give them training not just in technology projects, but everything from teaming to maybe intellectual property, why it's important. Might even teach them a little accounting so they can talk to a venture capitalist and understand what a balance sheet is. And also social issues, the ethics of nanotechnology. Make sure that we've thought through the risk and we do the appropriate things. So that's what we're trying to do with the National Institute for Nanoengineering.
And Robert, you've torn yourself from sunny Hawaii to come to Melbourne, where it's particularly cold this morning. What's happening in nanotechnology in Hawaii?
Well, there's a big movement in Hawaii, but I'd like to talk a little bit about, I want to kind of share a little bit what Regan and David just said. They touched on some really important and valuable issues, but what's unique is that students don't really understand how much we don't understand at the atomic and molecular level. And I think that has a tendency to encourage kids to get involved in something. If they realize that people have been researching this stuff for many, many, many years, don't understand everything, and that we are still looking for answers, it's an incentive to get involved. It's a way of sparking their interest and their curiosities. The application areas for nanotechnology are incredibly broad. They go from material development on glass, where glass can clean itself, where glass reduces the energy infusion into a building, where water is purified, where cars run more efficient, have less heat production, less output of emission, on and on and on. In the bio industry, there's in the dental industry, optics, just such a broad breadth of application areas, and there are so many things that we just don't know. And so with a $1 billion industry growing, we need technicians to fill those needs. And without students being encouraged to come into this field, we'll never make it to the economic impacts that everyone is claiming. And that's a big part of what MANSA and a big part of what COMS is about.
Thanks for spending some time with us today.
It was a pleasure meeting with you. And I welcome all the listeners to go and search on Nano, MANSA, COMS, and get involved.
Welcome to Azo Nano News Business News. Platypus Technologies, a life sciences nanotechnology company, has been awarded a $2.3 million contract with the Edgewood Chemical and Biological Center in Maryland. The funds will be used to advance the development of liquid crystal-based sensors utilizing the company's proprietary technology. Two scientists have joined the Center for Nanoscale Materials at the U.S. Department of Energy's Argonne National Laboratory. Elena Roskova and Elena Shevchenko are contributing their expertise to the Nano-Bio Interfaces Group. Semiconductor Research Corporation, the world's leading university research consortium for semiconductors and related technologies, and the Commerce Department's National Institute of Standards and Technology have announced a public-private partnership to support research and innovation in nanoelectronics, which is an emerging area in electronics that exploits the unique properties of nanometer-scale materials. The goal is to develop a radical yet practical successor to the basic electronic building blocks in today's computers and to demonstrate its feasibility in computer circuits during the next 5 to 10 years. Affymetrix Incorporated announced that Empire Genomics has obtained a non-exclusive worldwide license to a number of Affymetrix patents covering the manufacture, use and sale of nucleic acid microarrays and related products and services for comparative genomic hybridization. The arrays and services may be used for research or diagnostic purposes. Biosant Pharmaceuticals Incorporated has announced the appointment of Joy A. Thomas as Vice President of Corporate Development. Ms. Thomas will be integral to Biosant implementing its corporate development strategies, including collaborations and licensing. Lumera Corporation, a leader in nanotechnology, announced that Ulf Jonsson, PhD, former CEO of BioCare, now GE Healthcare, and Jim Ritchie, CEO of Orgeron Biosciences Incorporated, have joined the board of directors of its wholly owned subsidiary, Plexura Bioscience. Applied Materials Incorporated, the global leader in nanomanufacturing technology solutions, with a broad portfolio of innovative equipment, services and software products for the fabrication of semiconductor chips, flat panel displays, solar photovoltaic cells, flexible electronics and energy-efficient glass, announced the appointment of Dennis D. Powell to serve on its board of directors, effective immediately. Applied Materials also announced that its board of directors has approved a quarterly cash dividend of 6 cents per share payable on the company's common stock. SciTime Corporation, the world's leading innovator of MEMS-based timing solutions, today announced that its board of directors has appointed Rajesh Vashisht as the company's new CEO. SVTC Technologies, the semiconductor and solar process development foundry, has appointed Jack Blaha, General Manager of Technology Services. Blaha will help SVTC customers leverage reticle design services, technology characterization, reliability, engineering, and other essential time-to-market accelerators in this newly created position. Omniprobe Incorporated, a supplier of nanoscale failure analysis and process control solutions for nanoscale analysis, announced that they've acquired the assets of Ascend Instruments of Beaverton, Oregon. Ascend Instruments provides hardware and software for sample preparation and manipulation in the focused ion beam microscope. Well, that was Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 10th of September 2007. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To review any of the stories you've heard about in this podcast or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening. Yeah.